Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. Bringing new ways of looking at things. We've been talking about relationships this week, and this week we've been talking about what I've considered to be, and others consider to be, the four primary factors in a disintegrating relationship that are really worth looking at and considering. These four steps, which some people have called the four horsemen of the apocalyptic relationship. They are criticism, contempt, defensiveness, and stonewalling. We want to talk about these four things. On Tuesday, we talked about criticism and how criticism works in a relationship. And yesterday, we talked about contempt, the natural extension of criticism, where criticism gets to the point where you're getting mean with each other. You know, you go from being critical to being mean. Now, this is, you know, it could be in the first year of a marriage, a relationship. It could be a parent-child extension. If you didn't hear those shows and you'd like to hear them, I'll teach you a little later about how you could possibly get copies of those programs. They're quite beautiful. Criticism, contempt. Now let's talk about the last two. Defensiveness and stonewalling. Criticism. You try to get together with somebody and you have a wonderful romance, and maybe it is a romance, maybe it's a friendship. It is natural after a while, when the romance kind of fades a little bit or the honeymoon is over, where you start being a little critical of each other. You say things like, you and your friends, you know, and you and your golf. Criticism, sarcasm, things like that, where you disrespect your mate, friend, hero, lover, lion, whatever it is. Then, that turns into a bitterness. And this bitterness, as it grows, you feel yourself more separate, and you become contemptuous of the other person. Yesterday, Roberta Atti and I talked about contempt. Contempt as it goes through nature, as it works in the human body, and contempt as part of the human spirit, a contemptuous spirit. Well, the next step of what happens, or it doesn't necessarily have to be a progression, but the next thing that happens in a relationship that you frequently see is defensiveness. I want to talk about defensiveness because it's primal. You react by attacking. It seems almost automatic to attack to defend yourself. Defensive phrases generally escalate an argument. There are several signs that mean we are reacting to an attack rather than listening to an issue at hand. Did you ever notice sometimes somebody could be talking to you or you're trying to present something to somebody, and you're saying the words, and before the words get out of your mouth halfway through your sentence, they're rebutting you, or they're telling you something back, or they're counterattacking? That's defensiveness. They turn it around if you're trying to ascribe blame. You know, they deny responsibility. That's one of the methods. For example, if you say to someone, hey, I wanted you to take my clothes to the cleaner. You didn't do it. How come? And the defensive answer, well, I didn't take them because you didn't leave them out for me. So you kind of get off the blame right away. What it really means is because I was angry at you and I wasn't even aware of my anger, but I didn't think about you. Turning it around. Another way of people being defensive is they make excuses. Forces beyond your control made you do certain things. I was late for work because the freeway was jammed, or because the traffic made me do it. The dog ate my homework, or I couldn't do it because. See, when love is waning, defensiveness starts to really show the separation that's between the two of you. And this defensiveness, this need to defend yourself in front of your mate, this need to protect yourself, this need to account for yourself by trying to strike a balance, by trying to make an excuse. Another form of defensiveness is called cross-complaining. you add unrelated complaints on criticism to whatever's being thrown at you. For example, we never have people over because I'm not because I'm antisocial, but because you never clean this house. And not really addressing the issue at all, but throwing out another to counter it. You know, it's like you throw out thing upon thing. Another method of defensiveness is repeating yourself. You think you have a morally justifiable reason for doing the thing you're accused of over and over again, and then you just keep repeating yourself over and over again. And no matter what a person says, you just keep repeating yourself, and you keep repeating the same defensive response. Well, if you made me dinner in the morning, or if you had my clothes, or if you did this, or if you just repeat it, and you repeat it, and you keep pounding at the person's weakness. If you worked, then I wouldn't have to. But you could tell from the communication that there's love missing, or it feels like love missing, and love may not be missing. It just feels like it. It's a defensive response. Body language very often will be a reflection of defensiveness as well. You know, sometimes people really get tough. You could actually watch it in people. Scott Baum once coined the phrase called the paranoid puff, where he said, you may remember this thing from what was that movie, Taxi Driver. Are you talking to me? That position where you put up your chest and you challenge somebody. Are you talking to me? There's a stiffening, muscle stiffening in preparation for an assault. Emotionally, what comes is a quality of antagonism or challenge. Cognitively, you act in a suspicious and you have a rigid way of thinking. I better challenge this before it gets to me. And you challenge the person with this rigid kind of psychological, verbal challenge. You don't have a right to speak to me this way, defensiveness. What if somebody just loves you and they want to bring something to you? But you're so defensive, you're so responsive, that you've got to challenge them by crossing your arms, tension in your body, you're ready for a fight at every moment. How did you get to that point? Well, you know, maybe you're drinking too much coffee in the morning. You know, maybe there are other tensions working on you. Maybe you're overstressed. But when it comes out in your relationship, and when you see the defensiveness there, it really can augur the end of a relationship because it could lead to other things. So defensiveness can very often be apparent. And when it's apparent between two people, it's like you're in a trial. It's like you're in a courtroom. Many of you have known this, and I know you've all been in this situation. You've been in a relationship where you feel like you're on trial, and there's a persecuting attorney. You know, prosecuting attorney? Persecuting attorney who's trying to present you. And why did you come home late Friday night? But, you know, you said, and they start going after you. And they start coming after you, and you can't trust anything, and you start going after them, and you're giving them little answers, and they're giving you more questions, and more questions, and more questions, and they're firing at you, and you're defending yourself, and you're defending yourself. Then you're counterattacking. And this becomes so tough, and you're trying to talk back to them, and you're trying to talk back to them, and they're trying to talk to you, and it's very, very difficult. It's a sign. I mean, it's a sign that stuff is missing, huh? Well, here's some statements that usually are the statements of people who are very defensive. People who are defensive generally feel, number one, that they are very unfairly picked on. They feel that people pick on them, that they're made picks on them. Number two, they very often feel that they are neglected for the positive things they do. Now, this is usually true. When you have people being defensive with each other, you rarely have any expression of positivity. It's usually like complaining at the beginning, like contempt. The big absence with this is that there is a with defensiveness is there's an absence of positive feelings. The only gimmick here is that sometimes people who are attacking other people start off with a compliment only to open you up so they could punch you in the belly. You know, they say things to you like, you know, you're a really wonderful mother, except when you don't pack the proper lunch for your children. You know, in other words, they give you a compliment of some sort, and then, boom, they punch you in the belly. So you don't feel like you hear any positive things. Another item that you might believe when you become defensive is you don't feel responsible for what goes wrong. You feel like you were just an innocent bystander. You also get a feeling that when your partner starts complaining, you want to jump in and complain right back. It isn't that you want to hear them. You know, I mean, think about it, friends. If you're in love and you have somebody you're in love with and they have something to say to you, in an ideal world of love, wouldn't you want to hear it? Wouldn't you want to hear them say to you, honey, I love you very much, and I really appreciate being with you, but your breath, you know, it's your trench mouth. You drink this green juice in the morning, and even though you brush your teeth early, then you drink this green juice, and then it festers inside you, and you smell a little bit like a cesspool. Right by the time I go to kiss you before you go to work, I'm smelling this bacteria forming, and I wish you could do something about it because you're such a beautiful, attractive person, but I just can't stand the way your breath smells. And it's not just me. I'm worried about what happens when you go out there and you're counseling people. You know, and you're talking to people. So with my deepest love, I'd like to share with you, you need to do something about your breath. Right? Wouldn't you wish that your mate would tell you that if it were true? Or would you rather your mate didn't tell you? Would you rather your mate let you go out with your bad breath? Listen, guys, how would you like to know if your fly is open? You know, you go out of the house with your fly open. Would you like to have the kind of mate who wouldn't tell you? Right? Just let you walk out like that? No. We want people. We want to have somebody who will share with us what they feel about us, what they could give us as feedback. So if we're in a position where we have to be defensive, where we have to be counterattacking, where we're hearing them complaining, where we are contemptuous of what they say, boy, this is not a partnership, is it? It's really a war. Now, where do we get this idea? Well, most people don't know what a marriage is like or a relationship is like. And when they look back, they remember, they never planned this, of course. They thought when they were kids, they looked at the relationships around them and they listened to their mothers and fathers and their uncles and their aunts and they said, boy, I'm never going to be like that. And then strangely enough, you wind up being just like your mother or father. You wind up being exactly the same kind of complaining, the same kind of antagonism. You wonder, how did I wind up like this? How did I wind up being the same way? Well, you see, the imprint is there. You slide into that, almost as if that's the way it's going to be, because that's the only thing you know, because you don't know. You don't see the signs. Luckily, if you listen to WBAI, maybe you get a couple of hints from some radio programs like The Positive Mind. And you say, hey, you know, contempt? Criticism? Maybe I could grab my mate and we could do something about this. Maybe we could talk about this. Another thing you may think to yourself is when you feel that your partner is the one who is always complaining. You know, when you feel that, that means that you're feeling battered. That means somehow the vehicle is not open. The communication lines are not open. Because somebody only keeps pounding at you when they feel that you're not being heard. Somebody keeps pounding at one issue over and over again when they do not feel they are being heard. You may need to learn how to give that person the feeling that they are being heard. Now, I know this sounds crazy because, you know, I mean, if they're, even though you may be listening to them and you may be hearing them, if they don't feel heard, if they don't feel gotten, if they don't feel that you can actually embrace them in some way, they are going to keep coming after you. So you have a responsibility. You have a responsibility if you want to make this a peaceful relationship. You can't blame only one side of it. Another thought you might have is that your partner's negativity becomes so intense and out of proportion that there's nothing you could do about it. You give up. You may often feel that your partner is too touchy. And then you may feel that defensiveness is the only response that is possible. Look, you don't have to defend yourself. You don't have to. You don't have to counterattack. You could lose the war. It's one of the easy ways of doing it. A person attacks you, give up. There's nothing you could win. A person comes after you and tells you you're wrong, and you fight back to kind of prove that you're right. I mean, what happens in these arguments? You left the toothpaste off the toothpaste tube, and you did it again, and I told you over and over again not to leave the toothpaste cover off, and you did it again on purpose. You did it just to spite me. Well, you know, maybe I left the toothpaste cover off the toothpaste tube, but I don't think I did it to spite you. But if I did, then it's beyond me that I did it to do you. But I'm not going to fight about the toothpaste cover. I'm not going to fight about this. I'm going to look and I'm going to see that there's some much greater need underneath this, some other place where you feel neglected. I'm going to try to address that in some kind of way. So these are the kind of statements. You know, defensiveness becomes a cycle. You go back and forth with each other's feelings, you're attacked by each other's defensiveness. We're talking about defensiveness that manifests itself in verbal reactions. There are two other ones that we'll later cover, and these are called stonewalling, and they're two forms of stonewalling. It's another form of defensiveness. Defensiveness can also manifest itself whereby a person appears to be agreeable, but is holding out. You know another form of defensiveness? Is agreement. Oh, I agree with you. Oh, sure. Oh, sure. And they don't hear a word you're saying. That's another form of defensiveness. Armand DeMille here with you with the Positive Mind. We're going to be taking your calls a little later. Let's talk about stonewalling. Stonewalling is such an interesting thing. Now, this is where it really starts to go bad. Stonewalling. Now, stonewalling is a very male thing to do, but it's also women also do it. Stonewalling is one surefire way to end a discussion. Unfortunately, while most men, due to their upbringing, see this as the safest retreat to keep everything intact, most women, also due to their upbringing, see this as their greatest and personal insult. Stonewalling. I refuse to respond. I stonewall you. I put up a stone wall against you. When somebody begins, stonewalling is often resorted to as simply a way of walking away from a situation because you just go numb. You just go dead. Somebody is talking at you and screaming at you, and there are two ways of stonewalling, right? One is to play possum, which is to go dead, and the other one is to aggressively shut up. Aggressively stonewall. Push against. I refuse. I refuse. I will not even respond to you. I look at you with disdain and disgust if you kind of present to me that way. I'm going to make you feel like nothing because I won't even respond to you. Well, that's crippling. Imagine having somebody who won't respond to you at all. Stonewalling is murder. But it gets to be, if you or your partner have resorted to stonewalling, what does it take to get you there? How do you respond when you are stonewalling your partner? What do you feel like in the inside? Do you know the feeling? Is there any love left? What's it like when you're stonewalling? What's it like? Can you stonewall your children? Here's an interesting question to ask yourself. Any of you have little children? Now, can you? They come after you, they come after you. Can you just shut down that way? Well, the difference is if you stonewall your children, somehow you can maintain a little love somewhere in the background. When you stonewall your mate, the love goes away. In your childhood, friends, where did you witness stonewalling? Who was the one who was the stonewaller? Did you have that in your childhood? Did you have somebody who was that kind of tough, who walked away, who refused to get engaged, who refused to be in the fight? Armand DeMille here with you with The Positive Mind. Stonewalling. People who stonewall simply refuse to respond. Now, occasional stonewalling can be healthy, you know, but as a typical way of interacting, stonewalling during conflict can be destructive to a relationship. When you stonewall on a regular basis, you're pulling yourself out of the relationship rather than working out your problems. Now, all couples, all people will try to engage in these four types of behaviors at some point or other. But the point of it is you've got to kind of do something to kind of bring yourself back away from these four types: the criticism, the contempt, the defensiveness, and the stonewalling. If you're at that point, you've got to find another way. Because what's ahead is not happy. I know many couples who have children. They won't get a divorce. They say, no, we won't get a divorce because of the children. We don't want to put the children through this divorce. So what they're doing is they are responding to each other with contempt, stonewalling, and defensiveness. What do you think the children feel watching this go on? What do you think they feel? What do you think the model is when a child watches parents stonewalling each other? So how do you do it? How do you get past it? How do you nurture? When you see yourself in trouble, how do one of you take responsibility for both of you in a relationship? And a little later, after the break today at 1:30, we're going to be taking your calls to talk about this a little more. We started talking about what we could possibly do. One of the things is remember the friendship. Remember the basis of your friendship. And here's a way I like to remind people to do it. Try to remember a time when you and the person you're related to, before you sealed the deal, before you got married or before you moved in together, that you two were walking somewhere and you two felt like friends. And it felt like a friendship. And you were walking somewhere together, and it might have been walking on a public park, or it might have been a bench, it might have been sitting on the rock somewhere, and you were sitting with somebody, and you said to yourself, you know, I really like this person. I like them. Not only love them, I like them. This is a friend. Now that person became your friend, because they obviously felt that way towards you, more than a lover, a friend. You've got to bring your mind back to that spot where this was your friendship. And try to remember the friend from back then. Very important. Many of you, for example, if you came from an island in the Caribbean, many of you met your mates on this island in the Caribbean. And somewhere in there, you remember having fun with your friend. You've got to bring back the memories of this friendship. Bring it back to you, not to them necessarily, to your own mind. Remember your friend. This person who is currently being vicious, who is currently yelling at you, who is currently screaming at you, who is finding fault with you, this person was once your friend. You got to get back to your laugh. You got to get back to the time you were dancing in the street somewhere. You got to get back to just the memory of it. Make a list of all the times that you felt the most friendship with this person, even if you're divorced from them. Even if it's somebody who you're divorced from, who you're trying to bring up a child with, you know, you've got shared custody. Make a list of the times when you had fun, and you remember them. And you sit back right now, if you have a miserable relationship, I want you to sit down and not just remember the romantic times, remember the fun times. Make a list of 10 times that you can remember when the two of you were laughing in the streets, or smiling at the sunset. Make that list. Make a list not for them, but for you. And remember those moments. Very important. Bring them back into your heart. Bring back into your heart that there was a friendship here. Listen, most relationships, my friend, are two children who are in a crawl space, trying to look for a partner somewhere. And they're reaching out their hands, and they're two damaged kids, and they finally touch somebody, and they find somebody. Love is very hard to find, but the friendship part of it, it's there. Try to remember it. So try to bring back the memory for yourself of the friendship. That's item number one. Item number two, for yourself this is, write down what you admire about your partner. Don't tell your partner. Think about what you admire. Is he or she attractive, strong? Do you like their hands? Do you like the way they are? Do you like their watch? What do you like about them? What do you like? Pick an item. Pick your items. What do you admire? Foster your admiration. Think about the things, the qualities they have right now that you could admire. Take those two steps, just those two. Remember your times of friendship and think of the things you admire right now, the qualities right now, and put them somewhere on a piece of paper for yourself. This, my friends, is the beginning of the attempt of you healing the entire relationship. You do not need their cooperation. This is what you could begin to do on your own. We get back from our break. I'm going to give you a few more steps that I know of, and then I'm going to take your calls today. I want to hear from you with this as well. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. 212-209-2900. We'll be taking your calls a little later. First, a little break and a little music. I haven't played for you in a long while. Here's something really sweet.
Yeah.
I love that heavy breath. That's Rachid, Rachid, R-A-C-H-I-D, Rachid Taha, Valencia. The album is called Arabesque, A-R-A-B-E-S-Q-U-E, Arabesque, and it's the one with, it's a mixed album. So listen, we're talking about the things. This is Armand Demille, in case you just tuned in. And if you just tuned in, passing by, and said, oh, here's some sweet music, let's listen to this. Well, now you can listen to the sweet voice. Here's what we're doing here today. We're talking about you and your love relationships, and we're talking specifically about how to make your love relationships work better. Now, love relationships could include your relationships with the people you work with, too. You know, if you're a boss and you've got relationships with people, you could have some of these things going on. Do you find a lot of criticism at your job? Do you find a lot of contempt at your job? Do you find a lot of defensiveness at your job? And do you find stonewalling? Very often, those very four things will exist right in your position at work. And if you're a boss or a supervisor, you can attack these, you can approach these, you can look at this, you can improve your work setting. See, if you're in a position of power, you can make your place work better. What are the different things you could do? We've talked about the different things you could do. One we talked about was trying to acknowledge the origins of the friendship and trying to remember 10 things that were acts of friendship that you can actually remember. The next thing is to write down what you admire in your partner. Now, this is an exercise, friends. This is for you. You know, this is for your private book. Think about one of your employees. If you're a boss, think about an employee. Write down 10 things you admire about your employee. If you're having trouble with one of your employees, think about 10 things you admire about your employee. Watch what happens to you when you write down the 10 things you admire. Okay. Number 3. Respect. This is such a funny thing. You know, and I know, that everybody deserves respect. We want it, and we want to be able to give it. There is no human that I don't want to respect, yet at times I behave in disrespectful ways. And I don't like myself when I behave that way. And I'm sure you don't like yourself when you behave that way. Keep your eye on the disrespectful stuff. Just keep your eye on it. I think you should have a frying pan and you should bop yourself off to the side of the head every time you do it, but it's a little too obvious. But keep in mind your respect quotient. Just have I acted in a respectful way? Respect. You know what it means. In relationships that deteriorate over time, respect always becomes increasingly absent. Sadly, sometimes people wind up treating their spouses worse than they would treat a complete stranger. People treat their children worse than they would treat a complete stranger. Without respect, you cannot survive. You must respect your mate. Otherwise, they're not your mate. Okay, next step of what you could do, and this is a big one. In every relationship, there's a stupid person and there's a smart person. Yes, my friends, sometimes they're two stupid people, and then there's always the smart one is going to make the things better. The smart one is not going to keep the four horsemen of the apocalyptic relationship going. The smart one's going to look at the defensiveness, the criticism, the contempt, and the stonewalling and say, wait a minute, what are we doing? I want to save this relationship. I'm not going to participate. Now, I'm not going to participate by stonewalling. That's not what I'm going to do. I'm not going to just not participate by stonewalling. No, I'm going to try something else. But the first thing you have to do in your mind is forgive the other person's frenzy. Forgive the other person for playing dirty. Forgive the other person for using their contempt, their defensiveness, their criticism, and their stonewalling. You have to understand that it took two of you to get to this point, and that somehow you have to forgive yourself for what you've done to this point, and forgive them for getting to this point. Next step, calm down. Calm down when you get flooded. Calm down. Don't let the emotions take control of the situation. Don't let the fire burn, and don't let the words of harm come out of the fire of the burning emotions. Don't let this rampage loose. Don't let those four horsemen gallop all over your beautiful garden of love. Don't let them do it, because they could trample your heart. You know what I mean? Shut your mouth. Stop those words. Stop does it. Now here's another technique. Another technique is be influenced by your mate. This is shocking. When your mate says something to you that's a criticism, sometimes let it happen. Do what they say. Let them have an influence over you. Be willing to take something that they say and just go with it. It's an amazing thing. One of the things we discovered is that mates very often, especially, mates, sometimes feel they don't have any impact at all. That they could be talking to you right and left. Look at you, you're always watching television, you're always watching television, you come home and you watch television, right? Shut off the TV. Now, you know, this may sound like a very simple thing, but the person who's watching the TV, it feels like a life struggle. I can't shut off the TV. What do you mean, in the middle of this? How can I shut off the TV in the middle of Will and Grace? How can I shut off the TV in the middle of this baseball game or in the middle of the news? But it's so amazing to just say, okay, I'll shut it off. Now, a thing happens. When your mate comes to you and says, you're always watching television, shut off the TV, why don't you ever shut it off? And she's so used to, or you're so used to her, fighting you on this issue, that suddenly you surrender. Look at you, you're always at your computer. Shut off your computer. Look at you, you're eating like a pig. You're eating so much food. Stop eating. Let them have an influence on you. And don't do it with resentment. Say, okay. Okay. Sorry, I wasn't aware how much I was doing that. Let them influence you. It's magic. It changes the field. It's an amazing piece of stuff, my friends. It just has such an impact. To feel, for someone to feel that they've had an influence over you. So give that a consideration. Do something, this is the next step, do something warm in the relationship. Something small, but something warm. Something warm is, make something pretty, clean something up. Get a task done. Do something that's been nagging, that's been hanging around. You know those boxes you've had standing over there that you've meant to put away? When nobody's looking, put them away. You know those clothes you've been meaning to pack up? Pack them up. Do something that has been nagging for a long time, that's been sitting there. Do something. Get something done. And then create a piece of beauty. Now, I know this may be hard for you to believe, but a single flower in a bud vase on a clean surface is magic. You must have a table somewhere in your house. Clean it off. A candle, a flower, no mention. Don't expect anything back. Do something, bring some warmth to the home. So warm up the relationship in some way. Try to bring in something. And if you can, try to hold back. Now, you know, I was looking at one of the ratios that people were talking about, and they kind of got to a point of a 5-to-1 ratio of positive to negative statements is the ideal. You don't have to have it all positive. But if there's going to be a complaint, there's going to be something you work on, there's got to be 5 positive things to every 1 negative thing. If you think about it, it becomes really hard to maintain that. And the last is, you know, you got to work on yourself. Because most of the stuff that comes out in relationships to hurt each other, you know, the things that kind of wind up aiming at each other and you wind up targeting each other, is usually as a result of your personal frustration. A relationship is just like a dance. You're moving in unison to create something that is truly unique. But what kind of partner are you, you know? Are you the kind of partner who's out of step yourself? Have you lost your own rhythm? Maybe the reason the dance isn't working is because, you know, you need a hip replacement. Who knows? Maybe there's something going on with you. Maybe you got to do some work on yourself. Maybe there's stuff that you've got to look at inside yourself, independent of your mate. Remember, it's not always the other person's fault. In fact, it rarely is. It's usually 2 people trying to make things work, but just not knowing how to do it. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I wish we had more time. We will take some calls. 212-209-2900. Sorry to keep you waiting like that, Michael. As just 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, hi, Armand.
Hi, can you speak a little louder, please?
Sure. I'm calling to just ask... or tell you that, for instance, I feel like my husband sometimes stonewalls me.
Uh-huh.
And I can, you know, tell from all the things you've discussed that I have some of the other horsemen, so to speak, the defensiveness and criticism. And I guess...
It must feel very sad. I mean, you must at times look at that relationship with him and you say to yourself, oh, where are we going wrong? How can I fix this? Because you see, when he stonewalls you, you must feel... What do you feel when he stonewalls you?
Sad and also I get angry.
Yeah. What's your name, by the way?
Could I just say Ann?
Ann, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And but I notice that there's a part of you that feels very sad right now. Is that true?
Yes, I guess it is. I didn't feel that way. I didn't think I felt that way before I picked up the phone, but...
Yeah. So, you know, what happens is that the telephone very often makes you cry. No. That's the thing about these darn telephones. When you begin to face it and you begin to look at it, it brings back a lot of the pain that's hiding underneath. You know what happens? You get in these relationships and you try to close everything off and you kind of put these sponges where your lacrimal glands are, you know, and you hold back your tears so you don't feel sad.
Mm-hmm.
And so you hold it all back and then suddenly you meet somebody and you say, help, help. Help, I don't know what's happening. I'm alone and he's alone and I don't know how to reach him and I'm acting this way and he's acting this way. So maybe some of those hints I gave you earlier today, you know, if you think about those, maybe there's a way of bending it a little bit. What does he think? Does he think that there's is he just happy the way things are or does he want to move?
Well, for instance, All right. After, let's suppose he's on the phone or he walks out of the room, and which I would consider the stonewalling part, and then the next time I talk to him, like if it was the next morning or it was the next phone call, he would just think it's forgotten, you know,
uh-huh.
Whatever happened, like it doesn't matter. He says I hold on to things, and I feel like he just doesn't want to address it.
Sure, and it's both.
Okay.
And it's both, you know, it's a little of both. Wouldn't it be nice if the two of you could talk with somebody about this to just try to take it a step further so that the two of you can find a little more peace? Listen, let me make a recommendation to you, Anne. Mm-hmm. Start with that suggestion I gave you about the friendship.
Right.
Finding the friendship, finding the positive qualities, going through all of that, going through those steps, and then ask him one day if he would join you in trying to do a consultation to find a better way of communicating. And either go for a consultation, right, to meet with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
She would say, you know, honey, we can improve this. We just got to learn to communicate a little better. Right?
Uh-huh.
That's one way of doing it. I could also recommend a wonderful book called Nonviolent Communication.
Oh, I've heard the shows with Marshall,
right? Yeah.
So it's a book that's on my list.
Yeah, you might want to do it because you might find another way of doing it. But, you know, you're exactly what you're saying, and, you know, and I can feel the sob that's inside you. It's like you're at that point, and this is the way it is. People kind of settle into this thing. They settle into this kind of a pained, the horsemen are kind of riding all over the garden, and really there's some beauty to be had here, and it just, you keep hoping it's going to get better. You keep hoping it's going to get better. If you go on enough vacations, it probably will get better. You know?
Okay. Permanent vacation.
Permanent vacation. Thanks for calling in.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille with The Positive Mind. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good.
I've been listening to your show for the last few days, and I have two things to ask you. One is that I'm dating a man for 4 years. We now live together. And he seems to be always late, or when he does arrive, he's tripping over himself, or he's in this whirlwind. And I get very frazzled and overwhelmed easily. So there's a very different personality type there. And he's very forgetful. And I seem to end up being his reminder on a consistent basis that I'm getting resentful, because I don't want to have to be his secretary, and I'll remind him to do something, and he'll say, well, remind me tomorrow, and then remind me tomorrow, and I'll say, well, it's not my job, and then I feel, in a sense, neglected when he forgets, because I get this impression that he's kind of self-absorbed. I got my braces off, and he didn't notice, so I was kind of, he seems to be in his own little world, and each time I broach the subject, you know, I guess he kind of gets defensive, I get frustrated, and it goes to anger.
So you know, I understand it, you know, and here's one of those cases where this amazing thing takes place. You know who he is. This is the way he is. This is part of his character. In fact, if you were to really look into it on the Enneagram, you would find this is his character fixation. This is the way he is.
He's an 8.
Yeah, I would kind of guess not an 8.
Oh.
I wouldn't go there. I would go more with the 5 side of it. Because the forgetfulness, the passive aggressiveness, all of that other stuff that goes with it, that kind of sounds like it's not the 8 specifically. But once you got it, you have to ask yourself the question, am I here to change him, or am I here to love him the way he is? Because if I'm going to get annoyed if he doesn't notice my braces, how's he going to react when you shave your mustache? How's he going to react when you change something else? How are you going to feel when he doesn't notice other things as well? You know? I mean, this is going to be who he is. So there's a deal we make with ourselves early on, and there's a couple of books that have been written about what they call food stamps. You save these food stamps. A food stamp is you find a negative about a person that you can't stand, and you put it somewhere in your pocket. You save it. And then you go through your relationship, and then, as you become intimate, you start pulling out your stamps and you're saying, see, and now here's something I hate about you. But if you're early on, you got to say to yourself, either I'm going to take it or not take it, but certainly don't look to change it.
Well, when I'm calm, I think, okay, I can accept these things. In the grand scope of things, they're not a big deal. But then when the incident comes and I feel like I'm waiting and the clock is ticking, or I've had some free time to remember to take out the garbage, or I guess, you know, I'm a four also, so yeah. I'm kind of, that'll
tough
tell
thing
you.
For a four, because, you know, romantics really need a lot of affirmation. Exactly. But the answer is the following.
Yes.
If you're calm, everything is cool. You know, so the work seems to be internal. It does seem like a very passionate relationship, and it does seem like it has a lot of fire going to it. But it does seem like you two are going to have a lot of conflict going.
We do, and usually it elevates anger, and we are both in therapy and couples therapy. So we try to address, you know, it just seems to be a cycle that no matter what the issue is, we get to the issue. I present it the best way I can. He gets defensive. Pretty much a lot of the feedback I get from him is, well, if you would say it this way, then I would react that way.
Well, maybe if you got a good couples counselor, maybe you need a different one. You know, somebody who works a little faster. Listen, I've got to get going. Thanks for calling in. Armand DeMille here with you with The Positive Mind. If you wanted a copy of today's show, it's 1-800-575-0580. Do send me email, armand@brainlink.com, BRAINLINK.com. 1-800-575-0580. Back with you Tuesday at 1 p.m., my friends.